Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Pull Up Podcast, brought to you by HoopsCritic.com.
Happy Tuesday to all you NBA fans out there. I'm your host for the Tuesday episode, Jacob Noble from HoopsCritic.com. We welcome everybody to the Pull Up Podcast. Joining me today is none other than fellow Hoops Critic writer, Justin Salkin. How are we doing today, Justin?
I'm doing great. How are you?
We are fantastic. We had a beautiful Memorial Day weekend. We hope everyone else had a great weekend as well. Unfortunately for us, the season continues on, and we have to work every night. And before we jump into tonight's game, I kind of want to reflect on the game last night in terms of being thankful. I know it's not Thanksgiving, but let's be thankful that we get to see another game. I was worried that both of these series are going to become sweeps with the way things are shaping out. How did you feel about it?
You know, I was thinking there were going to be sweeps too, especially in Warriors Rockets. I know games one and two were close. Rockets had their chances at the end. Game two with the last second play where Curry strips the ball from Harden. But the Warriors just had this ability to turn it up on you, to figure out how you play, and then they just take advantage. And I was kind of worried that that happened in game three, and I thought the Rockets were done for. But they surprised me last night, so I'm thankful that went five. And, you know, maybe Atlanta pushes this five. I mean, I know Cleveland keeps winning, but they're banged up. LeBron's banged up. They still don't have two of their three best players. And, you know, maybe Atlanta's able to extend it too. It's a good thing. We don't need two sweeps.
Well, let's jump into last night, because I actually disagree with you in a sense that I felt like if this was a sweep, this Warriors and Rockets series, if it was a sweep, to me it would be the closest sweep of all time, because outside of game three, which we'll talk about that for a minute, the Rockets basically just rolled over and died, which was shocking to me. You know, it was an effort issue on my end that I saw. To me, I feel like they kind of just had their hearts torn out of their chest in that game three. And that's why I think game four was shocking to see how it played out, which I guess, you know, kudos to them for, you know, turning around and stepping it up. But going back to it, it's just, you know, game three was just, a lay down for the Rockets, which is not what you want to do. You played two tough games out in Golden State. You could have won both of them. You had the opportunity to win both of them. Came up just short, so you think they'd come into game three firing on all cylinders, but that was not the case. Instead, what they needed was arguably the best playoff performance of all time in terms of James Harden. And I'm just going to throw a couple stats out here, which kind of blew my mind seeing it. You know, he was one of the only three players in postseason history to have 45 plus points on 22 or fewer shot attempts. However, the other two players, who were Jordan and Dirk Nowitzki, they'd done it with over 23 free throw attempts. Harden only took 13 free throw attempts last night. That, to me, was huge. It stood out like, holy crap. He also had a true shooting percentage of 81%. And with considering, you know, all the three-pointers he took, too. I mean, he stepped back. He took 11 three-pointers. So I just want people to, like, really understand, you know, what they saw in that situation there. It was mind-boggling to me.
Harden is unbelievable. I don't think he gets as much credit as he deserves. And partially it's because the way he plays is kind of boring compared to some legendary players. I mean, you have LeBron. The guy just runs over you in transition. He's an absolute, you know, he's just a rock out there. I mean, Steph Curry,
right,
the way he's shooting, looks like he's falling over. You know, he's so tiny, he's so slippery, he gets anywhere he wants. It just looks so thrilling. You know, other guys like Westbrook, he's just such an athletic marvel. I mean, I feel like the way other guys do it is more exciting, but Harden just gets it done. I don't think he gets as much credit as he should because, you know, just the way he does it is kind of boring. He doesn't have that big athletic first step. He doesn't have that, you know, powerful, you know, put his body into you in transition. He doesn't have that exciting, you know, crossover, you know, like some other guys have. He just kind of, you know, runs the pick and roll, uses his hesitation dribble, gets to his spot. But it's so effective. I mean, he could shoot, he could pass. And it's, to be honest, I think that's why Houston's been so good despite all the injuries, because no matter who's out, everything runs through Harden. He's at the top, pick and roll, he gets to his spot, and then if he gets to his spot, he's either shooting where he's passing to a spot-up shooter, and whether that shooter is Beverly or Pablo or Terry or Ariza, Monty Unis. I mean, it's the same result no matter who the person is, and I think that's why they're able to sustain their injuries. He's been unbelievable. I don't think he gets enough credit for the kind of season he's had and the kind of playoffs he's had. I mean, I know he wasn't
right
on the court when they made the comeback in Game 6, but he's just been great.
Right. And as I said, I was on ESPN Radio today out in Salt Lake City talking about James Harden, and I said, you know, outside of that Game 6 moment, and really right after that moment, he became a new man. He's a possessed man. He's averaging 32 points per game in the series. His turnovers are pretty low, considering how much he handles the ball at only 2.8 turnovers per game, which is the same amount as Stephen Curry. And this is the first time in NBA history, and this is what's so weird about this postseason, is just there's so many first times in NBA history, but it's still not attracting the casual sports fan. But what I was going to say a minute ago is this is the first time in sports in NBA history where the MVP and the runner-up MVP squared off and both players averaged over 30 points per game in the series, at least so far. They're both at 32 points per game. That, to me, is insane because that usually says that, you know, one MVP candidate or maybe the runner-up, you know, overtakes the MVP guy or vice versa. It's just kind of shocking that we have all these first times. We haven't even got to LeBron, and we'll get to his remarkable postseason in a few minutes. But in terms of what the games are doing outside of, you know, this series, and this series is probably, like we said a second ago, it's probably the closest potential sweep we've ever seen. It's neck and neck. But I think Houston responded very well that game. They were aggressive. They were getting to the basket. And, you know, on the flip side of that, I feel like Golden State kind of just, you know, laid down and I guess I'm expecting to take Game 5 at home. That's kind of what I saw in that performance. And I don't want to say they laid down, you know, because they did have runs. They did cut the lead, you know, when it was up to 20-something points, you know, a couple times throughout the game. They got it back down to single digits. But they never led, and they weren't aggressive enough. They weren't. I mean, they only took 13 free throw attempts. They really weren't tacking the basket. You know, so to me, it was kind of one of those like, all right, everybody look at each other. Is someone else gonna take this W? Who's gonna step up for us? Whereas the Rockets on the other side, it was do or die. Down 3-0, everybody had to step up. So I'm very, very curious to how it's gonna play out in Golden State. I'm kind of expecting something similar to Game 1 or 2, where it's very competitive. The Rockets have a chance, but Golden State kind of just, you know, as you pointed out a few minutes ago, they just figure out a way to win. They're going to figure it out, and near the end, they're just going to, you know, go on that 11-point run and win the game.
Yeah, I'm extremely confident in Golden State next game. You know, all NBA players, to me, are good enough that if somebody wants it more than somebody else, they're probably going to get it done, especially in the playoffs when all the teams are good. I think Golden State came out, like you said, you know, a little lackadaisical, a little lazy, like, hey, you know, we're up 3-0. Even if we win this, what's the big deal? We're going to get all this time off for the finals. Doesn't even matter that much. Came out a little relaxed, you know, a little nonchalant about the game. And Houston, obviously, you know, elimination game, everything on the line. They laid it all out there. And you saw that energy difference early. The Golden State just didn't look into the game. You know, they tried to come back. Sometimes you get down that much, it's just too much. And I think they're a little lazy. I think, obviously, they'll come out much more focused in Game 5. They're not going to want to go back to Houston. They're going to know they're on their home floor in front of their fans. I think they're going to come out with much more focus. And I actually think they're going to win the game by about 10, 15 points. And the reason I think it is because just looking at that Memphis series, I mean, they're down 2-1. Memphis has home court, and everyone's saying, oh, Grizzlies figuring them out. You slow them down. You know, they die by the three. Yeah, Phil Jackson sending all his tweets. And then Golden State just figured it out. I mean, they put Bogut on Allen. They did that adjustment. They just have so many gears and so many ways to play that over time they just figure you out and there's just nothing you can do because there's so many things they can do. I'm worried they're going to do that to Houston in Game 5, kind of like what they did in Game 3, except, you know, maybe it'll be a little closer. Houston will play a little better and fight harder, but I'm all on Golden State's train in Game 5. I think they're going to win the game pretty easily.
Right, and we don't want to give away too much of what our article is going to be coming out soon where you know, you and I and Snotty and Josh are kind of doing a free-form discussion. We were kind of talking about the pros and the cons and what needs to be done for this and that, which will be released tomorrow morning. But not getting too far ahead of ourselves with that, I want to talk about something else that kind of happened. And I do believe in curses like this. You know, I really think a curse like this is, especially with this team, how good they are, it's not really going to work. But we've seen it time and time again where, you know, a team kind of, you know, makes championship T-shirts ahead of time, and you know they put it up on their website, or you know they kind of jump in the gun in terms of a series. I don't know if you got to see this, but the Warriors media handed out media advisories that they would be returning home today to Oakland following their 4-0 series sweep of the Rockets. And the media would be, the media can gather at this time and this location. Draymond Green would be available to meet with the media. Here's the who, what, when, where, why. What do you make of the Golden State Warriors doing that? Do you think it was a little preemptive, or do you think it's going to come back and bite them, or a little oopsie-daisy from their media team?
I think they'll be all right. I don't think it'll affect the result in Game 5, but I think that's something you really shouldn't do. You got to at least keep it internal and not release it to the media. I mean, it's just disrespectful to the other team. I mean, you're already planning your parade, your championship, and you're not even out of a series yet. I mean, I know I wouldn't like that as an opposing player. Let's just say if I'm Kevin McHale, I know what I'm putting on my bulletin board tomorrow night.
Right, you're putting that media advisory up there. But then let's follow up with that, because now there's whispers around the NBA that they're thinking about rearranging the NBA Finals dates because, I mean, we can't go, 5-6 days without basketball if Cleveland ends up winning tonight and Golden State wins tomorrow night. We're going to be sitting here for 4 or 5 days, actually longer than that. We're going to be sitting here for like 7-8 days without an NBA game waiting for the NBA Finals. So they're even talking about changing that. And if you're Kevin McHale, and to me, say what you will about his ability to coach, his ability to motivate is unquestioned, I think. And I think we saw that last series when they were down to the Clippers, and he kind of just said, hey, guys, let's go out there and have fun, play basketball. Let's go do what we enjoy. You know, he's a player who's been in many situations throughout his career, and he knows that you don't want to, especially with this team. You know, we know Dwight's quote-unquote loser mentality that he's unfairly labeled, in my opinion, but people do label him that he's not a, go-getter. He's not like, doesn't have the quote-unquote it. Well, we always look to how to measure it. You know, Jordan had it. I think LeBron has it. You know, most superstars tend to have it. He's kind of one of the players that seems to lack it. Obviously, Harden had his failures in the finals with Oklahoma City Thunder back in his day. So these are a couple of guys who, don't really have a track record of winning a lot. So you can't burden them with the troubles and worries the same way I think that the Clippers got burdened in the series prior, where they had, more on their chest and this and that, whereas the Rockets just, came out and played basketball. And I think McHale is going to do a very good job getting his team ready for Game 5 and hopefully Game 6 and Game 7 for our sake. I hope there's more games down the road here. But so I think we both agree that it's not going to play out that way. I think you said you have Golden State winning Game 5. I unfortunately do have Golden State winning Game 5, but much closer than you do.
Yeah, I do have Golden State winning Game 5. One thing on the legacy talk with Harden and Howard, especially with Harden, I think sometimes you need to slow down with labeling guys when they're really young. I mean, Harden's, 24, 25 years old, and people are already saying he disappears in the playoffs, he can't produce in the playoffs. And then he comes out and he has this sensational playoff run he's having. I mean, how do people say that now? I mean, I know he struggled in the 2012 finals. I mean, he was a kid in the 2012 finals. I think that's right. A little bit of an unfair burden that he struggled scoring on the wing against LeBron James and Dwayne Wade in their primes, 22, 23 years old, And I think sometimes we're a little quick to write a guy's legacy, and definitely shouldn't with Harden. I mean, with Howard, maybe it's a little different, but I think people forget that in the 2009 and 2010 playoffs with Orlando, when they went far, he was unbelievable. I mean, he was the driving force and the reason they went to the finals. It was him and a bunch of guys who fit well together, and he just brought it home. And I know they lost in, I think it was 2011 to the Hawks, but he had a huge series that year that he just bottled up everybody else. And he's got some good playoff stats, too. I mean, I think Dwight's one of these guys where people don't like him, and I think it leads to him getting a worse label than maybe he deserves.
Right. Yeah, and that's it's an unfair label, It's just a shame. Let's hop over to the other series here. A series that probably has been very disappointing in terms of the competitiveness of these games, whereas there hasn't been much competitiveness in these. I felt like Cleveland dominated Game 1. Game 2 kind of was a toss-up there for a while, but again, Cleveland pulled away. Game 3, we can talk about everything that happened in there. Hawks, I feel like, blew a chance to take that game. And my question to you is, we're going to start with not getting away from the analytics and just using our brains for a moment here. To me, I think what the Hawks are missing is that guy in the locker room whether it's a veteran or just a high energy guy, someone who gets pissed when they lose. I have this, like, Atlanta just seems like a bunch of good guys, and I was fortunate enough to be in that locker room a couple times this year. They're a very unselfish team. They're very even-keeled. But to me, I feel like this is, especially right now, this is becoming a downfall for that roster. They don't have, and you know, it's easy to use this guy as an example, but they don't have a guy like KG who's going to flip over a table after you know, an embarrassing loss and tell everybody to get their act together and, you know, use some, you know, non-suitable for children language to kind of put a fire on these guys' butts. I don't see that happening with Atlanta, and I'm very concerned with that. And the other side of that is, and I'll let you go on to it, but we know how important Kyle Korver is to that team. We also know how important Damari Carroll is to that team. I'm worried that missing one piece is that much of a downfall for that roster, because if that's your case, you're basically banking on zero injuries in order for you to have a successful, not year, but a successful playoff run. So I'm going to throw those out there and let you kind of just pick those two thoughts.
You know, my thing with the Hawks, I do kind of agree with you, you know, on the leadership / somebody who gets frustrated when they lose issue. I mean, just reading some of the quotes, I think when they lost, I think it was game one in the Wizards series, and Millsap said, you know, I think we won that game internally, and Paul Pierce was like, I don't even know what that means, you know. And then recently, too, I was reading, another Millsap quote, actually. I'm not trying to pick on him, just talking about the roster, but he also said, you know, we think we can do something this year or next year. You know, well, why are you talking about next year already? It almost sounds like you're looking ahead. And, you know, I think that might be a part of it, but I think the biggest thing for them really is their confidence. I mean, I think confidence is extremely important in sports, you know, from being an athlete in my past too. You know, when you're nervous, when you're thinking about things, overthinking, don't feel comfortable, you know, feel like, you know, what's the consequence if I lose? You know, everything's slower. Your feet are stuck in mud. You can't move. It's hard to think and execute your game plan. And the way the Hawks play, you know, they have that read and react offense. You know, when they get nervous and they get tight, that ball slows down because, you know, you're not making those quick beats. You're thinking for that half second that you wouldn't normally – you just do something. You're aiming your shot. And I think I noticed a couple of times, I think Korver was aiming his shot this playoffs. And I really think that's part of it. I think there's some self-doubt there. And it almost seems like when they told the media, like when they beat the Nets in game six, I think Millsap was like, you know, this is the way we have to play. This kind of shows us that we could play the way we have to play. You know, you read quotes like that, it almost sounds like they're trying to talk themselves into that they believe in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really a part of the problem in Atlanta. I just think so many guys are lacking confidence, especially in that Game 2 loss. It wasn't as bad in Game 3. So, I mean, I really think that's the big issue in Atlanta. I mean,
yeah,
you look at the injuries. Yeah, sorry. You get to your point of the injuries. I mean, you look at that. I mean, like you said, you know, one guy goes down, it's almost like the bottom falls out. And it kind of makes sense because they have such an ensemble cast that, you know, everyone does something else. And when you take out one person, he's not doing that thing, and all of a sudden there's nobody to do that thing. You know, it's not like what I was saying with Houston before where Harden kind of does everything and everyone plays off him. So if somebody's out, somebody else plays off him and it just works. You know, the Hawks, it's kind of like everyone plays through everybody, but at the same time, it's also hard to make the injury excuse because not for nothing, they had Korver until game three. So they were already down 2-0, losing both games in the home floor. And then Carroll, too, they already lost home court before he went down. So it's kind of hard to blame the injuries, especially when you have those two things and you have the fact that Cleveland's without two of their top three guys.
Yeah, it's, you know, you like to find the problem with the Hawks. I mean, I think we all could agree that the coaching nod would probably go to Mike Budenholzer over David Blatt in the series. But it's just so shocking that, you know, you got the super team in terms of the Hawks. You know, it's like that bad boy Pistons, not the bad boy Pistons, but the 2004 Pistons where it's just such a, you know, four all-stars. It's you know, it's not one man doing the show versus a team where essentially has one man doing the whole show. You know, LeBron's just been ridiculous. And I actually saw a stat that he broke the record for most amount of touches in a single playoff game with 140 touches. So it's to the point where it's just LeBron, and if you can't game plan a way to, you know, if your game plan is to let him get his and stop everybody else, well, then you're doing a poor job there because you got other guys going off. You know, Tristan Thompson seems to get every offensive rebound in the world, and no one ever seems to box him out. J.R. Smith is lighting it up from three. You know, Dellavedova is out there lighting it up for three. You know, so if that's your game plan, that's not working. And if your game plan is to stop LeBron, We both know that's not working. So something's got to change for the Hawks team, and it has to change real soon if they want to be competitive in this series. But I think let's jump to the other aspect of this is, you know, Cleveland is limping into there, and what they're doing right now is remarkable in my mind. I didn't think that they'd make it to the finals coming into the playoffs, although they had that hot end of the year. Was it something like 35-6 to close out the season or something ridiculous? I still didn't think they had it in terms of, you know, they still had a lot of people who, you know, need to learn how to win. Their two stars, first taste in the playoffs. Obviously, the injuries mounted as they went. And I just thought, you know, LeBron would have to be the greatest player of all time for them to even make it to the finals. And sure enough, here he is, be the best player of all time at this stage right now. You know, doing it all, averaging a triple-double right now in the series with 30 points per game, which would be the first time ever anybody has averaged 30-point triple-double for an entire series if they end up winning tonight. But my question to you is, and this is probably the hottest topic that's going around, because everybody has a different opinion on it, and I said my opinions on it. Dellavedova, I'll let you answer it. Is he dirty, or is he just a hustle player?
This is a tough one, and I do think that, you know, this is something people will be open-minded on. I really think he's not dirty. He's out there, and he hustles. And I just think he's extremely determined when he plays. I think sometimes there are some guys who they just hustle and get after it in a way that other guys don't. It's just, you can't really put a tag on it, but it's just something guys do. And because other guys don't do it, it looks different. It looks unorthodox, and it gets under guys' skin. And I think that's part of what's going on here. I mean, I think he gets close to the line at times. Maybe he went over the line with the leg lock on Taj Gibson, but I just think he plays hard and he tries to do his thing and he tries to get it done for his team. And like I said, I think that gets under guys' skin. It got under Al Horford's skin. You know, I think it really unnerves guys. And I think he plays hard. Yeah.
For me, it's not, and I agree with you, I don't think anything he's done has been intentional to hurt anybody. I'll say that right now. Because my whole theory is if someone wanted to hurt somebody, they would do it. You know, they wouldn't have to sneakily do it or make it seem like it wasn't intentional. No, they would just hurt somebody. But at the same time, I feel like he plays recklessly. And maybe that goes into his hustle because, and I said this again on the spot I did this morning, I said, you know, if, yes, you can call him a hustle player all you want, but I've never seen a guy in the NBA fall down backwards more time than him. It feels like every loose ball, he just plops his body down on the ground backwards. And most players don't do that. They'll dive forwards or they won't, you know, jump backwards onto the ground. But I just feel like, you know, especially with the Kyle Korver injury, that's kind of the situation that happened there. He was jumping backwards for a loose ball and ended up getting on top of Korver's ankle, rolled it. And the same thing with Al Horford. You know, if you watch the play again, I felt like Dellavedova, which is he was just, you know, reckless. He didn't have control of where he was going or what he was doing, and he just ended up plopping down on top of Horford. And, you know, when you get anywhere near big guys' knees, and I do this too in pickup because I'm small, you know, I'm not tall, so I box out. So the way I box out is I get really low. So my butt ends up hitting tall guys' knees, and they get frustrated. They'll push me in the back or whatever, or, you know, they'll take their hand and grab my face and neck and move me out of the way, you know, whatever they have to do that, you know, something I did that aggravated them. So I don't think, and same thing with me, I'm not intentionally trying to hurt anybody. I'm just, you know, doing what I can with my abilities. But I still feel like he plays a little reckless at times, and I think that's where, you know, a lot of these guys are speaking out against him. And it's kind of 50-50, you know, in terms of the players. I don't care what the media says. I listen to what the other players say. They play the game. You know, they know the unwritten rules. And to see, it's kind of like 50-50. And even the old players, you know, players who don't play anymore. And we saw it live in the broadcast. We had one guy, Reggie Miller, who's ironically one of the more dirtier players in the league, complaining about Dellavedova, and then on the other side you had Chris Webber saying, well, you know, I don't think he's a dirty player, you know, he plays hard, you know, he's going to fight harder than you for something because that's how he makes his NBA career. Dellavedova is making his career by doing that stuff. He didn't make it for his shooting, he didn't make it for his passing, he didn't make it for his athleticism. He makes it for his hustle and determination, and that's how he's going to end up, you know, the quote that we all like to say, feed his family. So I'm with you. I think it's kind of 50-50. I don't think you're either right or wrong if you call him dirty, and I don't think you're right or wrong if you call him just a trick hustle player. I mean, he clearly knows what he's doing. And I forget who it was. Someone pointed out, he goes, you know, this isn't, you know, a 5'4" or Boykins here. This is a 6'4", 200-pound guard. He's not some little scrawny scrub. You know, he has some legit size to him. And so I can kind of see where players get frustrated. But at the end of the day. The NBA hasn't seen anything wrong with it. I think they assessed them just a technical on the Taj Gibson leg lock, which is, you know, obviously an instigation there. But, you know, if you can get away with it, it's, you know, I can't even think of, like, another situation. It's just basically, you know, you poke and poke somebody the whole time, and then, you know, that player turns around and punches you in the face. They get ejected, and you know what? You did something good for your team. You know, it's just part of the game. So let's go back to the game here for a minute, though. Can the Hawks win? I don't even want to say the series. Can they win a game in your mind?
Yeah, I really do think they can. And the reason I think they can is just, to be honest, I really don't know how – it's hard to say how good this Cleveland team is with all these guys out. But I know one thing you could say is, you know, Kyrie's out and Love's out. They're not good defenders. You replace them with Dele and with Tristan Thompson, and the defense is better. But LeBron's trying to do so much. He's extremely tired. His body's ailing, and I think it's a beatable team. I mean, the Hawks nearly beat them last game. You know, they were an offensive rebound, a fluky, kind of fluky LeBron three in the corner, and winning that game. They win that game, we're kind of talking a different tune now, right? So I really think the Hawks have a shot to win this game. And if they do, you know, you go back home. And also they might relax a little bit. You know, I was saying before, I think they're very tense. You know, all of a sudden you're down 3-0. Who thinks you're going to win? There's no pressure. Just go out and play basketball, like Mikhail said last series, right? I think they can win this game, and who knows? I mean, if you win this game, go home, win game five, all of a sudden the weight of the world is going to be on LeBron's shoulders in game six to bring home the Eastern Conference for his city. So, who knows?
Right. Well, the good news is it sounds like Kyrie Irving is going to be playing tonight. He was a shoot-around today, running around, joking, laughing. You know, it's obviously hard to tell to sit here and look at something from a distance and say, oh, he's definitely going to play. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if he sat. It wouldn't surprise me if he played tonight.
Apparently Kevin Love's been cleared to travel. I don't know what that
travel
means.
To team, yeah.
He doesn't want
to
play, you know.
No, because didn't he still have, like, 8 to 12 months of rehab? Not months, but 8 to 12 weeks of, you know, resting the shoulder before he can actually do anything with it?
Yeah,
I think it's just more,
know.
You know, moving right. around.
Kind of one of those things I took note of.
Oh, man. So, I think you have the Cavaliers winning the series as well?
Yes, I do have them winning the series. I mean, like I said, I think Atlanta can, you know, do some damage here, but I still have Cleveland winning the series.
Right. And I just want people to, and I tweeted it out, I believe you retweeted it too. There's just so much hate in the world. And, I'm not a LeBron James fan. I don't know about you personally. I'm not a fan per se. But you and I love basketball, and I wasn't a Jordan fan growing up. I hated the Bulls, hated Jordan growing up. I was a Penny fan. I was a Magic fan as in my younger days. But you still have to respect those players, and if you don't respect it, you're going to miss out the opportunity to sit there and say, I watched that, you know, live in person, like the way you hear our parents talk about, you know, seeing Nick greats or seeing Laker greats or Celtic greats. You know, I would have loved to seen Larry Bird play in person. I would have, you know, loved to see Magic Johnson play in person. Unfortunately, I never got that opportunity. And even if you weren't a fan of them, you should still appreciate it. So I just hope everybody truly, really appreciates what LeBron James is doing. And I know ESPN does enough of, you know, his ball watching for everybody, but still in an internal, you may not like the person. Well, what's the famous Anchorman quote? I hate you, Ron Burgundy, but God, do I respect you. That's all we ask for you. You got anything else to add, Justin?
No, I mean, yeah, like you said, LeBron's a great player. You got to respect his game. He's going to be one of the 10 greatest players to ever play. And I mean, just sit back and enjoy the ride. No need to nitpick everything the guy does and says. That's all.
Right. Well, Justin, you've been fantastic. I love having you on with me on Tuesdays. We'll see what you're up to next Tuesday. And don't forget to listen on Monday nights for Josh Eberle's podcast as well, the Pull-Up Podcast coming to you. And unfortunately, we want the season to keep going so we can keep doing these episodes, because before we know it, it's going to be the summertime where we'll be discussing drafts, we'll be discussing summer leagues, and the stuff that most people really don't listen to because it's not the NBA. So we'll check you guys later. Take care, everybody.
Have a good night.